Yes. And then, so this is the topmost desire, to serve the Lord. This is what attracts His mercy. But there are many other desires, which are called uti. Uti is the singular, and in the verse you have utayaha. Utayaha is the plural. Many material desires. So many material desires. So what did we say about the material desires?
They are all represented together by the lotus that came out of the
Okay, yes.
The
stem, the lotus stems that comes out of Garbhodakashaya Vishnu is the agglomeration of all the desires of the living entities. It is, we said, Hetu. It is the cause of the cosmic manifestation. The Lord has no business creating the material world. He's happy in Vaikuntha. Is the Lord of Vaikuntha. But we want to enjoy. We want a separate place. We want to be Lord. So He says, all right. He fulfills our desires. And He makes a place for us. But this place is actually created by... It is to fulfill our desire for enjoyment. So material desires, it is called karma vasana. The impetus for action. And it is of two kinds, pious and impious. Due to these material desires, not only the universe is created, but our bodies are created again and again and again and again and again. And we travel perpetually in the cycle of birth and death due to these material desires. So we should become free from these material desires by taking up devotion to Krishna. Alright. So today we will go further. The next topic to be studied is Manvantara. So the definition of Manvantara, which is given by Sutta Goswami, Manvantarani Saddharma. This is verse 4 in the second canto. 10th chapter. Manvantarani Saddharma. This is the definition which is given. So what means Manvantara? First of all, we saw before, it is Manu Antara. Antara means change. And Manu is the name of the ruler of the universe. So the change of ruler in the universe, that is Manvantara. Prabhupada also calls it the reign of Manus, the rules of the different Manus. This is what is called Manvantara. And the Manus are known as the fathers of mankind. We are all descendants of the original Manu. So, just as we said Utayaha was many, many material desires, similarly, Yaha Manvantarani, this is a plural. Many Manus, so many Manus. How many Manus? 14 in one day of Brahma. 14 Manus. It means that Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, actually, they are helping Lord Vishnu to manage the universe. So one day of Brahma is divided into 14 periods as far as the management is concerned. So actually there are millions and millions of Manus in existence. The Manus are partial expansions of the Lord. Partial expansions. They are one variety of expansions of the Lord. And we said 14, so 14 Manus, I was looking... Prabhupada gives details. 14 Manus in one day. And one day of Brahma has naturally 30 days. So that gives 420 Manus in 1 month of Brahma. So 12 months of Brahma make 1 year, which makes 5,040 Manus per year of Brahma. And then Lord Brahma lives for 100 years. So this comes to 504,000 manus in the life of one Brahma. And there is one Brahma in each universe, and there are innumerable universes, so there are so many manus, manvantarani, many, many. We also hear, so 14 periods in one day of Brahma. In one day of Brahma, there are 1,000 yuga cycles. The yuga cycles, Kali, Dwarpa, Treta, Satya. That is one cycle. So 1,000 times this cycle goes round, that is one day of Brahma. So when that is divided by 14, so it comes to approximately 71 cycles of yugas for one life of Manu. So one Manu lives for 71 yuga cycles. So it's a personality existing on a different plane. If we want to understand what the demigods are like, we should observe the ants on the ground, the small, small insects. When now we are sitting in one room, so suppose there is one small insect that is crawling on the floor. So the perception of the insect and our perception are very different. We are sitting in this room, we are hearing some intelligible discourse, and we are understanding, and we are taking notes, and at the same time we are thinking about so many things and hearing so many things, we are aware, you know, there are pictures, there are charts, there are fans, that we know there is a sun outside, there are trees outside, we are in Bombay, we are in India, we are on the bank of the Indian Sea, we know we are on the planet, so many things we know. But the ant that is crawling on the floor, does he know all this? Of course you could say, we haven't interviewed him. But there is a good chance, from the lakshana of the behavior of the ant, there is a good chance that he doesn't know anything like that. He just knows there is a hole somewhere in the wall where the families, there's a family, a whole nation of ants in a hole somewhere in the building, and the ant knows where that hole is, and then he roams about on the ground. Does he know that there's a fan? No. Does he know that there are charts and pictures on the wall? No. Does he actually hear the discourse? No. So from the point of view of the ant, this is all. If somebody would tell the ant that there are pictures on the wall and we are in Bombay and there is a sea, he would say, impossible. Right? The ant would say, no. The world begins from the hole there where we all live, and it ends at the end of the building there. You know, I go back and forth every day, find some food and go to sleep. So similarly, when we hear of Lord Manu, we think, what's that? Phantasmagorian. We are playing the ant. Phantasmagoria. How is this possible? Somebody who lives for 71 yuga cycles, which, excuse me, means 71 times 4,320,000 years, which great scientists have calculated to come to 360,670. My God, I can't even read it. 300 million years. Lord Manu is living 300 million years. What to speak of Lord Brahma? This is only 1/14th of a day of Brahma. So the ant is thinking, these are stories for reading to the children before they go to bed. But this is the opinion of the greatest brains of the universe. Those who are not devotees, who do not believe in Shastra. But the devotees understand that the perspective of the ant is very different from my perspective. So why not? How can I assure that there is not another perspective in the universe much higher than mine? Prabhupada told us the demigods are all around, but we cannot see them. Just as the ant cannot see the pictures, the fan, for him it does not exist. Because he cannot perceive. Similarly, we cannot perceive the life of Manu, the existence of Manu. But he exists and he rules the universe. So, we are talking here of a very great personality. Many, many personalities. And then they come one after the next. That's why it says Manvantara. There is no gap. There's always the next Manu is coming. And they train the next Manu. They know who is the next Manu. They're always training somebody to be the next Manu in the universe. Alright? Now, what do the Manus do? We said they rule. Yeah, they formulate laws, good directives, it is said, the good directives for the living entities and especially for mankind. The good directive by which mankind can learn sat dharma. They lead us to devotional service. So this is one thing they do, they give directives. We all know of the Manu Sahita. These are the laws of Manu. There are different kinds of sanhitas for ruling the lives of the living entities so that they do not get into trouble and to rectify them when they get into trouble. And the most prominent one is the Manu Sanhita. Not only they compile those scriptures, but they teach them also. The teachings of Manus are there. In the Bhagavatam we have sometimes Lord Manu, I think in the 8th canto, Manu is teaching his son, so he's teaching, they teach. And they ensure that the teachings are propagated throughout the universe. How do they ensure that? In different ways. One way is that the Manu is like the emperor of the universe. And we know an emperor is the head of lower kings. So the Manus are there, they ensure, they oversee the management in all the different planets. They ensure that there should be good rulers on the earth and other planets. There should be good rulers. We see in the Bhagavatam that at the time when King Uttanapad was leaving his body, there was no son, no descendant who could take up the job, the succession. So Manu, Swayambhuva Manu himself, even though he had by that time retired, he came back on the picture to ensure that another king, Priyavrata, was installed. So that there is no gap in the management. Because as soon as there is no ruler, or as soon as there is a ruler like King Vina, a bad ruler, as we are seeing nowadays in Kali Yuga, then the destiny of the living entities is very dark. Because Sat Dharma is no longer taught. Now, this is what is happening in Kali Yuga. We are not taught in the schools by the governments. The governments does not ensure sadharma, they ensure adharma. They make sure we commit sins. They encourage us to commit sins. So Manu teaches the principles of transcendental religion. And he makes sure that the principles are followed by setting up all the kings of the universe. He oversees that. And then he also, all these kings, Manu and all the kings, they protect sages. They protect the brahmanas. They maintain the system of varnashra. And they maintain saints and sages, because sadharma is taught through the saintly kings and also through the brahmanas and the sages. So when we study Manvantara in Srimad Bhagavatam, we include the birth and activities of the Manus, how they rule, how they change, how the Manu changes. And we also study the saintly kings as part of Manvantara. And we study the teachings of the saintly persons as part of Manvantara. When Manu, as I said, is not doing his job alone, so that means that every time he's like the head of the universal government. And every time a Manu changes, there is a whole set of personalities in the universe that change. Most of the personalities we know in the universe, we know them as persons, but they are actually posts. And different jivas occupy those posts. So different jivas become Manus. Very qualified jivas become Manus. And every time the Manu changes, there are six different other entities in the universe that change, including Lord Indra. Every time there is a new Manu, there is a new person who takes the charge of Indra. Indra is the king of heaven. Manu is the king of the universe. Sorry? Yes, yes. The seven sages, the Saptarishis, they also change. The prominent demigods who are assisting Indra, they change. And of course, Manu is a grasta, and along with him, his all descendants, new descendants are coming, new sons, and he rules the universe along with his descendants. And then in each reign of Manu, the Lord incarnates. As I said, Manu himself is a sort of partial expansion of the Lord. And in every Manvantara, means in every period of Manu, the Lord incarnates. There is a Manvantar avatar. The Lord incarnates. So, I have some of the names here, just for information, of the... who is the first Manu in the universe? Svayambhuva Manu is the first Manu in the universe. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, where is the life of Svayambhuva Manu described? Starting from the third canto, there is the appearance of Manu, the creation actually of Manu by Lord Brahma. And then we hear of his descendants, because we heard he rules with the help of his descendants. No? So who are the descendants of Svayambhuva Manu? Who? No. Priyavrata. Uttanapad. These are the two sons of Manu. Yes. Yeah, okay. That's another Manu. Vevashvata Manu. Vevashvata. Which one is Vevashvata Manu? The current. Yes. The current Manu. Vevashvata. Right? And we heard already that this Swayambhuvanu had two sons and three daughters. And his daughters were Devahuti, Prasuti, and Akuti. So we hear all this story in the fourth canto, Uttanapad, and then Devahuti we hear in the third canto. And then Uttanapad with all his descendants, Dhruva, the Prachetas. And then we hear the story of Daksha. Daksha married Prasuti. And then Prajapati Ruchi married Akuti. So we hear all this in the fourth canto. Then the fifth canto we hear about Priyavrata. So, like this. So we see several cantos in the Bhagavatam are dealing with the first man. And then gradually we will hear in the 6th, 7th cantos of other manus. So the manus, okay, let's see, the names of the manus. Swayambhuva, the second one is Svarochisha, then Uttama, Tamasa, Raivata, Chakshusha, also very famous, the sixth Manu, Chakshusha, Vaivashvata, who is the present Manu, Savarni, then Daksha Savarni, Brahma Savarni, Rudra Savarni, Dharma Savarni, Deva Savarni, and Indra Savarni. So, these are the later Manus. And in each Manu, as we said, there is an avatar of the Lord. During the time of Swayambhuva Manu, the Lord appears as Yajna. Remember? This is also in third canto. The Lord appears as Yajna. And then during the time of Svarochisha Manu, he appears as Vibhu. During the time of Uttama, he appears as Satyasen. During the time of Tamasa, he appears as Hari. During the time of Revata, he appears as Vaikuntha. During the time of Chakshusha, he appears as Ajita. And during the time of Vaivashvata, he appears as Vamana. And so on. So all the names of the Manvantara avatar are mentioned. And he appears in this Manvantara avatar, usually he appears to help the management of the universe in some way. Like in the case of Vamana, there was a disturbance in the universe, in the management of the universe. The demons had taken over Indra's kingdom, right? And they were taking over the whole universe. So disturbance, the forces of the demoniac forces were overpowering the Sat Dharma. So therefore the Lord incarnates and he helps the Manu. So the Manus teach, the Manus, the saintly kings and the sages, they teach Sat Dharma not only by their teachings but also by their example. It's very important that the Manus are very exemplary in behavior. Any questions about the Manus? Yes, Kali?
You said the Manus are after the incarnation of God?
Yeah.
You said they are also Jivas.
Yeah.
They are not living anything.
Well, they can be seen in two ways. You know, all the posts of the universe, when there is no qualified Jiva, the Lord Himself takes charge. He expands. Otherwise, the Manu who is a Jiva is also considered an expansion of the Lord in the sense of Shaktavesh. They are empowered. They are specially empowered by the Lord. Without being empowered by the Lord, no one can do this kind of task. In general, anyone who, Krishna says, wherever you see strength, Wherever you see might, you must understand this. My energy is working. So in that way, if it's a jiva, it's an empowered incarnation. And otherwise it's a partial expansion of the Lord. Yes?
You just don't get the Lord incarnate in every reign of Manu.
The Lord incarnates in every reign of Manu.
And also in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 8, it says that the Lord incarnate was in the reign of Brahman.
These are different kinds. He says, we say here that the Lord incarnates once in a reign of Manu, and sometimes we hear the Lord incarnates one in the day of Brahma. So there are different kinds of incarnations of the Lord. We read that. What are the different kinds of incarnations?
Six times.
Yes. Leelavatar, Gunavatar, Manvantaravatar, Shaktaveshavatar, Yugavatar, Purushavatar. Six. So they all appear at different, they have a different time for appearance. Mahavishnu, there's one Mahavishnu in each breath. You know, Mahavishnu he appears. I mean, Mahavishnu, in one sense, he's always there. He manifests he stays in Yoga Nidra, in the causal ocean, right? And at every breath of Mahavishnu, then there are so many Garbhodakashayi Vishnus and Kshirodakashayi Vishnus, like that. So they appear at different times. And the Lord Himself, once in the day of Brahma, He appears. So like that, He appears. In every yuga, there is a yuga avatar. And Shaktavesh avatar are innumerable. As it is, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable. It is, we will read this in the next topic, Ishanukata. They are as numerous as the sand on the beach, or rivulets that, you know, that go to the sea. So many. Any other question?
Normally when we say once in a day of Brahma, it's Krishna personally in his own personal.
Yes. Where they live. Manu has his own capital, which is called Barhamati or something like this. Barhamati. He has his own capital. It's called Barhamati. And I remember studying in the fourth canto, and even in the fifth canto, when there is a description of the different planetary system, there is a mention of the residence of Manu. I don't remember exactly where it is. It's on the higher planets. But as it is, Manu travels. He doesn't always stay in his place because he's a ruler. So Manu travels all over the universe and he visits different places. As we saw with Kardama Muni, that he came. Not only was coming to bring his daughter to Kardama Muni, but he was also on tour. So he tours.
What is the difference between Manu, King Indra and demigods?
Between Manu?
Manu, Indra and demigods.
Well, you can call him a demigod if you want, but he doesn't... The demigods, we understand, they control the senses of the living entities. We will study that tomorrow. The demigods, they control different aspects of the creation, different functions of the creation. Manu looks after the rulership, the rulers. Looks after the rulers. And as we said, he makes the laws and all. demigods don't do this kind of things. They are, you know, like you have the demigod of the sun, he controls one planet and he provides the heat and light for the whole universe. And then you have Vayu. Well, Vayu controls, he also has his abode in Bhumandala, and he controls the movements of air, all kinds of movements of air. And so on. Varuna also has his abode, and he controls water, the element water, like that. So, and along with water, I mean, he controls water, and along water he controls the power to taste. And similarly, Vayu controls the air, and he controls the sense of touch. We'll study that tomorrow, how the demigods are actually controlling all the different functions that the human beings are using to to actually perceive and enjoy the sense objects. But Manu is different. Manu is a ruler. He oversees the affairs of the universe.
And he's also ruling the demons or demonic planets. He's also ruling the demonic planets.
Well, he's the emperor of the universe. He doesn't rule personally. He doesn't rule personally. It's like, he's an emperor. So emperor means under him, there are many Lokapalas. There are many rulers of all the... Each, even the planet Earth before, used to have only one ruler. And now in Kali Yuga it does not exist. But the planet Earth, until even King Parikshit is said to have been the sole ruler on the Earth 5,000 years ago. So like that. The whole system of management in the universe is a system of delegation. Vishnu does not, as we said, he maintains the universe by setting up the whole thing very nicely. And then he empowers all these personalities to look at the things. And he is sleeping in the, where? No, Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. He is in the milk ocean in Shvetadvipa. He's in the milk ocean. So, and all these personalities, empowered personalities, they are ruling. Okay? Alright, so we'll move to the next. The next topic is Ishanukatha. So Ishanukatha, this is also plural, Ishanukatha are the accounts, the kathas, the accounts of the pastimes of the Isha, the Lord, the same Lord of Vaikuntha. The Lord incarnates in the material world, as we just said, but specifically this is about the Leela avatars. These are the definition that is given here by Shukadev is avataranucharitam hareschasyanuvartinam pumsam ishakata prokta Nana Kyano Pabhivitaha. So Prabhupada says Ishakata he translates as the signs of God. The signs of God. It's actually the accounts, the stories. It says Nana. Many, 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 many accounts. Because how many Leela avatars are there? These are the ones that are compared to rivulets going through the ocean. Innumerable, as many as there are waves in the oceans, there are Leela avatars, the avatars of the Lord. It includes also other kinds of avatar. Actually, it's not only Leela, but it's mostly the stories are the Leela avatar, beautiful, beautiful Leelas. But it includes also other kinds of avatars. So, accounts are called Akhyanas. Actually, it is said that the stories related in the Puranas, originally Lord Brahma or Lord Sri Vyasadeva, when he divided the one original Veda into four, there were already in the original Vedas some historical accounts of the universes and some historical accounts of the appearances of the Lord. And these parts were called Akhyanas. And from these Akhyanas, Vyasadeva compiled the fifth Veda, Pancham Veda, specifically the Puranas. So here it says, the activities of the avatars of Lord Hari, the Lord of Vaikuntha. And not only that, but Anuvartinam, Asya Anuvartinam, which means it also includes the stories of his followers. So we have so many stories of devotees in the Bhagavatam. And usually, of course, the story of the devotee is connected to some story of the Lord, because the devotee and the Lord are always together. So we have the Dhruva Katha. So Dhruva is a devotee of the Lord. So this is Ishanu Katha. And of course, Dhruva Maharaj will have a darshan of the Lord. So Isha Katha is there also. Prahlad Maharaj is a devotee of the Lord. Nishinga will appear, Leela avatar. So they are connected. Ambarish Maharaj, yes, story of devotee of the Lord. Even Parikshit Maharaj, his life, his activities, his liberation. These are the stories of the devotees. As I said, I believe in the beginning, the topics of the Bhagavatam, they sometimes overlap. They overlap. It's not always only one kind of thing. Nishingadev, what is Nishingadev Leela? As we said, it's Ishanu Katha. It is Poshara. Because it is protecting the devotee. So it is mixed. So, the characteristic of the avatars, what could be the characteristics of the avatars? What are their characteristics of these avatars?
Appeal garments.
Okay, you are saying about their purpose. Yeah, so that's one thing, is that one of their characteristics is they have a specific purpose. They come for a specific purpose. So they come to kill the demons, to establish Dharma, to save the devotees, to take care of the devotees. Yes. In general, they come to bring the living entities back to Godhead. This is the purpose of their descent. We hear that from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam in chapter 2, I mean, the end of chapter 2. Krishna says, Bhavayatyesha sattvena lokavai lokabhavanaha neelavatara nurato devatiryan naradishu. He says that the Lord incarnates for the purpose of taking back to Godhead those who are in the mode of goodness. Who are in the mode of goodness are the worshippers of Lord Vishnu. In other words, it's the devas, the devotees. And in that purport, Prabhupada explains very nicely. He says that, and then he says that. Further he says that there are innumerable such avatars. So their purpose is clear. In fact, when we read in the third chapter of the first canto, there's the list of 20, 25 avatars there. And for each of them, the purpose is given, why they come. What do the Kumaras do? They distribute knowledge of Brahma. Yes. What does Narada Muni do? He teaches bhakti. Yes. What does Varaha do?
He saves the Vedas.
He saves the earth. He saves the earth. Yes. Like that. And so on. Like they all have a different purpose, and it is stated. Each and every one of them has a purpose. So this is one of the characteristics. What are the characteristics of the avatars? Prabhupada said they are mentioned in the Shastra. The prominent ones, Prabhupada said, the prominent ones are mentioned in the Shastras. He says, whatever list is given in the Bhagavatam is a partial view of all the incarnations. There are many others, such as Hayagriva, Hari, Hamsa, you know, Hamsavata, Krishni Garba, Vibhu, Satyasena, Vaikunta, Sarvabhoma, Vishvaksena, these are all the Dharma, Manvantara avatar. And they do not only manifest in the human form, they manifest in all the different species. And they liberate all the living entities that they come in contact with. Through direct contact when they come, and through the Ishanukatha. Prabhupada says this Ishanukatha is to be given respectful oral reception. They come so that when they come, so they liberate the living entities in the universe, and they leave behind the katha. And then we, now if there is no avatar at the present time, then what we do, we associate through the ear with the pastimes of the Lord. And the sound of the incarnation of the Lord is not different from the Lord, so we also get liberated. So this is the purpose of the avatars. That they come to liberate us, to take us back to Godhead, one way or the other. They are mentioned in the Shastras. What are some other characteristics of the avatars? They descend, avatar means to descend, they are Vishnu Tattvas, yes, which means, Vishnu Tattva means they are controllers of the material energy, they are never under bewilderment. And they do not descend because they have to descend. They do not descend because they are forced by some karma or somebody, no. Atma Mayaya, Krishna says. Out of their own swa icha, they descend. So these are some major characteristics of these avatars. Prabhupada writes about them, and that the activities of the Lord are not limited only to human society. He incarnates himself even as a fish, as a hog, as a tree, and many other forms. It says actually he incarnates in all the different species. Kurma, as a tortoise. So this is Ishanukatha. So it means the kathas, the stories of all the devotees, and the stories of all the incarnations of the Lord. Now, Krishna Katha is not Ishanukatha. What is Krishna Katha? Ashraya. This is Ashraya. Any question?
That is because we
Yeah, in the end of the list of incarnations in the first canto, Sutta Goswami says, Ete Chamchakala Pusa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. That out of, because he lists Krishna in the avatar, but he says out of all these we should understand that Krishna is the Lord himself, Bhagavan Swayam. Whereas the others are incarnations of the Lord of Vaikuntha, and they are expansion of the expansion of the expansion. Kala and Pumsa, they are expansions of the expansions of the expansion. But Krishna is the original Lord. So after Ishanukatha, we study Nirodha. Nirodha means destruction, annihilation. Srila Prabhupada calls it winding up. You know what I mean? Wind up, winding up something. Because we saw that Mahavishnu, now from Mahavishnu everything unfolds one after the next, one after. So Nirodha means packing. So Prabhupada calls it winding up. Because that's the way things happen in the end of time, is there is a dissolution, call it. The dissolution. Everything disintegrates back into the finer and finer and finer and finer and finer elements until poof, it enters Mahavishnu. He breathes in this annihilation. So there are different types of annihilation. We are talking here of the final annihilation at the end of the life of Brahma. We'll talk, there are different kinds of Nirodha. So right now the definition which is being given, it's in verse 6. Nirodho asya anushayanam atmanaha saha shakti bihi, which mean Nirodha, Prabhupada said, winding up, the winding up of the cosmic manifestation. So this is at the end of time, or at the end of the cosmic time. Lord Brahma is 100 years old. How old is he now? 50. Yeah. Muni is. If I remember, he's 51. He's 51. He has just passed 50. He's 51. So you can say, oh, we have time until he dies. We have lots of time. So what happens? Actually, this final annihilation has to do with Mahavishnu's activities. Mahavishnu awoke. There was a time when he opened his eyes. He awoke from his yoga nidra. He glanced outside of himself, opens eyes, he glanced and everything unfolded. And here we are talking. And when Mahavishnu, it says the lying down of Mahavishnu. We didn't hear anywhere that he ever got up. But at least we know he opened his eyes. So now what happens? He's feeling a little sleepy. So he'll close his eyes. And when he closes his eyes, all the material energy becomes still. Actually, it goes into an unmanifested state. You know, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there is vyakta and avyakta. Eternally, there is a cycle of manifestation and unmanifestation. So this is it. Mahavishnu closes his eyes. He enters yoga nidra. And when he does that, all the universes are reabsorbed in him. But as I said, not as they are, as big balls of matter. They disintegrate. There is a fire that takes place from the bottom of the universe. In each universe, the whole universe burns up and is disintegrated. From Ananta Shesha's mouth. Yes. So, he lies down in the causal ocean, in mystic slumber, and he goes to sleep beyond time, because time is only manifest in the material energy. So beyond time, he goes to sleep. And at that time, the external energy, as I said, it disintegrates. There is what is called elemental dissolution. You understand, Mahavishnu created the elements, the 16 elements. So these 16 elements are dissolved. It's called elemental dissolution. In Sanskrit they say prakritika. It's the prakritika nirodha. Prakritika nirodha, the dissolution of the material nature at the end of the life of Brahma. So what happens at that time? All the material energies are withdrawn. And the living entities who are in the universe, they have no more gross bodies, right? Because there's no more gross matter. No more gross bodies. And even the subtle bodies, everything is disintegrated. And the living entities also go into a sort of slumber, like Mahavishnu. But he remains eternally conscious, whereas we go into a kind of unconscious type of slumber. And we enter, we are absorbed within Mahavishnu. And Prabhupada says, along with the upadis, which is not Prabhupada, it's Jiva Goswami, says, along with the upadis means all the memory of our karmas and desires and all what's about us, this is kept in memory. It is remembered by the soul, by the super soul actually. It is remembered by the super soul. And all that, the jivas and all their karmas and everything, it is stored within Mahavishnu. As much time Mahavishnu opens his eyes, as that much time he closes his eyes. Millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of years, we could say eternity, passes by until the living entities are again, he opens his eyes again and again, they are again manifested.
What happens to ever liberated souls or Nitya Muktas during annihilation period? Jivas, they are gone along with their karmas and desires in the slumber, you say. What about the Nitya Muktas and liberated souls?
So I was just going to speak about that. The Nitya Muktas itself, like the ones who are eternally liberated, we call Nitya Muktas, they never go through this. They don't go through this.
What happens to
cycle.
Annihilation.
They are not aware of this. They are in Vaikuntha. This is not in Vaikuntha. The Viraja, there is the Viraja river, which is on the bank of Vaikuntha. And the, it's a portion of Vaikuntha. So it's in the causal ocean that all this is happening. But for those who are in Golok, they don't know about this. They are not affected. They are not affected by this.
What happens to Gabodakshay
Vishnu and Kshirodakshay Vishnu? Yeah, they go back to Mahavishnu. Kshirodakshay Vishnu and Gabodakshay Vishnu, they also, as they expanded, they go back to Mahavishnu. Yes. And as I said, they are not different persons. It's Mahavishnu who retracts himself. And so, at that time, as we said, the living entities, they go into Mahavishnu. But there are two kinds of living entities, which is one of the points you were bringing up. Most of the living entities, they have desires, uti. They want to enjoy. So at the time of annihilation, they simply merge into Mahavishnu and they just sleep there in unconsciousness until the next creation. It's called the Mahakalpa. Until the next Mahakalpa, they wait there. But there are some living entities who are ready to go back to Godhead at the time of annihilation. And these are very few. It's not the majority. But these are special souls which are described in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, mostly yogis who have elevated themselves through yoga mishra bhakti, and they have elevated themselves through the upper and higher through the planetary systems, through the process of yoga by purification. They elevated themselves beyond swarga to tapoloka, maharloka, tapaloka, janaloka, and then they managed to go to the planet of Lord Brahma. And whenever a living entity reaches the planet of Lord Brahma, he does not come back down. He stays there in a body which is very ethereal. It is said that the body of Lord Brahma is made of intelligence, which is the finest element. His body is not made of... Our bodies are made of what? Mostly earth. We have earthly bodies. And Mahabhutas, all the variety of Mahabhutas, and most prominent is the earth. Right? But the demigods don't have earthly bodies. That's why they can do so many things. They have all mystic powers. They have form, but it's a subtle form. And similarly, Lord Brahma has the most subtle form. It is said that in the capital of Lord Brahma, there is nothing stable. Everything changes very, very, very fast, because Lord Brahma is pure intelligence. And his capital is like that. It's a very fantastic world. So there are yogis who live with Lord Brahma. And they cannot go back to Godhead before the end of the life of Brahma. When Lord Brahma dies and goes back to Godhead, mostly Lord Brahmas are very pious, so when Lord Brahma dies, then they go with him back to Godhead. So this is, and they are liberated and obtain pure devotional service. It is said that they don't all go back to Godhead. No. If the Lord Brahma doesn't go back to Godhead, then they go to Mahavishnu. But they don't go to Mahavishnu in a state of slumber. They actually go with their consciousness there. And when Brahma is again taking birth, then they come back to the universe. Yes, Prabhu?
Some part of his mind can be that any entity which falls in his future world.
Yeah.
First place the birth of Brahma.
Yeah.
And then that will
fall.
Slide down.
Yeah.
And then down and down.
Yeah. And an explanation for that is that it's not that they always become Brahma, but they live on the planet of Brahma. When the living entities come, because actually, the fact is that Krishna is actually willing to satisfy our desires to be God and to be happy in the material world. So when we come from the spiritual world, we don't become a cockroach. We become Lord Brahma. And we actually become, Lord Brahma is like the God of the universe. And if we don't become Lord Brahma, because we become one of the associates of Lord Brahma. It's also understood like that. We become one of the associates of Lord Brahma with a very subtle body and very high quality of enjoyment. But the nature of matter is such, and the nature of the ahankar, because there is ahankar. So the nature of the ahankar is that it will drag us down. So gradually, one somehow has the, you know, due to the desire to enjoy, because the desire to enjoy is there. So due to that desire, one will contemplate, and therefore one will go down in the universe to see what's happening. And as one goes down, one becomes more and more entangled, 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 entangled. No, I didn't say that. When Lord Brahma dies, I don't know whether it is 100%, but generally yes, they degrade, because we came here with this purpose to enjoy separately from Krishna. So because of that desire, we are going to be touched by the mode of passion, and this is going to drag us down. Yeah. We are in good association, in other words.
One more question.
Yes.
Now, you said that Brahma is already 300 years old.
Yeah.
Does it mean he is 100% dead?
Being very pious. I don't know, I haven't read anything about that. I haven't read anything about this, but...
In
Satya Yoga? Of the yugas does not spread all over the universe. The influence of the yugas does not spread all over the universe. The yugas are influenced in Bharatvarsha. Bhumandal, I'm not sure whether it's the whole Bhumandal. I remember in Bharatvarsha. Bharatvarsha means Prithvi, the human kshetra. There is the influence of these four yogas. Because in the other, because mostly the other places, the other dvipas in Bhumandala, they are like, it's called Homa Swarga. They are only enjoyment. It's only enjoyment. It's called Homa Swarga. You read the descriptions of, there are also kalpa taru trees and big mangoes, huge mangoes that are, we can't measure them, and there are rivers of mango juice. You want to go, right? So there are like this, so it's very heavenly. And oh, the whole universe as it is very heavenly. Only here. And of course in the hellish planets, you know. And otherwise there is what is called Swarga, which is the, I don't remember what it's called, the actual Swarga, the heavenly planets. And then there is Bhauma Swarga. And Bilva Swarga is the one down. In the lower planets it is Bilva Swarga. Here there is Bhauma Swarga. And up there is Swarga. So, in all the three worlds, there is enjoyment. There are facilities for very heavenly, gorgeous enjoyment. But in Bharata Bhumi, in Bharata Varsha, then there is mix. There is enjoyment, and there is Hawaii, There is Goa. Everybody wants to go to Goa because Goa is, you know, much more, life is much more easy in Goa than in, who knows, somewhere in Rajasthan, where you have to get the water from the wells. You know, when you throw your bucket, you never have enough rope, you know. So, like that. So the four yugas, they mostly, their influence is in that area where it degrades like this, you know, where there is this influence of degradation.
There is no mention of this change of span of life.
No.
Like
no.
Years.
This
they
is in. Yes. Everywhere. It's here. The yogas are in Bharatavarsha. Yes.
In every initiation, let the living entity come back to the same subtle body, with the same desire.
Yes.
Back to there.
Yeah.
Every cycle of the birth, same way.
Yeah, you get your own back. You take off from where you left. It's us. It's individual. It doesn't belong to anybody else. Yeah. Yeah, they may come back to any planet. It's according to the karma. But the karma is individual. Natvevaham jatunasam natvam neme janadipa. We are eternally individuals. And we have our own package. That's why yesterday when we were discussing suffering, who's responsible? Who can it be? It's my thing. It's my karma. It's my responsibility. Nobody else. So, as I remember, it's Bharatavarsha that has this influence of the cycle.
Because this is the only karma
bhoomi. This is karma bhoomi.
You are either reaping the
karma phal.
Positive pious actions or doing good actions.
Yes. Am I confusing everyone?
That's my problem. Bharatavarsha is also the 11th Varsha. Prabhupada says, earlier 11th Varsha also.
Yeah, there is a confusion about that name, yes.
So then, Shiva, how much of you say 11th Varsha, Lord Shiva is only male, surrounded by billions of people?
No, the description of, in the description that we find in the Bhagavatam of Bhumandala, Ilavrita Varsha is the central dweep where Lord Shiva lives, yes. But this Bharat Varsha is different from that, according to the, you know, the description of Bhumandala. It is different. And I remember reading this thing, that it's when it says that this earth was before named Bharatvarsha, and before that it was named, what was it? There was another king's name, and before that it was named Ilavrita. I actually found it, it's not in my mind right now, but I was researching that once, because I was confused with this. But even if there is a name like this of Ilavrita, it is not the same as the Ilavrita Varsha. It's not the same. No. Yeah, no, it's not the same place because, it's not the same place. The place where Lord Shiva lives is Ilavrita Varsha. That's a different kind of place. We would know it, no? There's only one male and everybody else is female. So it's not here.
But very clearly remember that one of the lectures, every witness we have recorded lectures, Prabhupada paid with Prabhupada.
Yeah. Ilavrita. I also heard that. It is contradictory. Yes, there is a little contradiction.
Is
this only karma bhumi, Bharatvaj is the only karma bhumi in the universe, or in every brahmanda there is a karma bhumi?
In every brahmanda there is. Yes. In every brahmanda there is. Every brahmanda has all these three planetary systems, and it has the same system of karmas and all. Yes. All right. So we finished that. I think I will just finish briefly. This Nirodha, the kind of destruction which Shukadev Goswami has described here, it is very particularly the end of Brahma's life. But there are other types of Nirodhas which happen at different times, which will be described by Sutta Goswami. So we will see that when we look at Sutta Goswami's definitions of the 10 topics. At that time we will see. Okay, so somebody has sent me a ticket here, which means stop. We are meant to have a break. I would have liked to finish this mukti, because after that I want to show the something here. So it won't be very long. It will take just a few minutes. Mukti, the definition of mukti is in verse 6. And this definition, all of you should memorize it. This is a very important definition of mukti, which gives us a very clear idea of what mukti is in reality, because in the world people have so many different ideas of mukti, including kaivalya mukti, impersonal liberation. Liberation means bas, finish everything, forget everything, merge into the Brahman, or there is nirvishesh and there is shunyavad also. Those who say that mukti means nirvana, nirvana means to disintegrate all the elements and go into bas, non-existence, avyakta. But we now have understanding that this is not mukti. The avyakta stage is not a permanent stage. This is the pradhan. This is basically the pradhan. The unmanifested stage of the material nature, where the elements do not exist. They do not exist as anything separate or clearly manifest. So we don't want that kind of shunyavad, end of our existence. And we don't want kevalya. Kevalya narakayate, they say. It's just like hell for the Vaishnavas, because it means that all our desires and senses and individuality is extinguished. It's switched off. We cannot distinguish it actually, but it is switched off. So we don't want that. And this is not the definition that Shukadev Goswami gives. He says, Muktir hitvan yatha rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. Very interesting definition. Hitva, having given up. Hitva means to give up. Having given up anyatha rupam, other forms. Other forms. What are these other forms? It means gross and subtle bodies. Having given up gross and subtle bodies, what happens? We give up the gross and subtle bodies, then the soul is there, but the soul is not something impersonal. There is something more. Svarupena vyavastitihi. To be situated in its own svarupa. So there is a rupa, there is a form, and sva means one's own, or the spiritual form, the original form, our actual self, which we now have forgotten. Who we actually are, we have forgotten. So to remember and be again situated in our actual spiritual personality. That is mukti. And so this mukti is thus the attainment of a spiritual body and the remembrance and reactivation of our devotional service and relationship in love of Krishna. We belong to Achyuta Gotra, the family of the Lord. We belong somewhere, but we have forgotten. When people ask us, oh, who are you? Immediately we are ready. I am so and so. My father is this, my mother is that. I was born here, I was born there. Prabhupada says, all nonsense. Because we are not that. Actually, we are someone in relation to Krishna. We may be his friend, we may be his lover, we may be someone in a parental relationship, we may be his servant, we may be simply facilitating his pastimes, making the whole atmosphere pleasant and beautiful by our own presence. We may be emanating a wonderful fragrance. Who knows? But this is our original nature in relationship to Krishna. So when we remember that and start being active again with our spiritual senses, then that is mukti. And this mukti can happen in two ways. As it says here, hitvanyata rupam, this means at the time of death. Mukti, at the time of death. The soul leaves this physical body and subtle body and enters the spiritual atmosphere. But this mukti can also happen while we are still in the living body. And this is called jivan mukta. Like Narada Muni. Narada Muni has a kind of spiritual body, but yes, he's a jivan mukta. He lives within the material world. Actually, he goes everywhere. He has a spiritual body. But jivan mukta, like for example, the Lord sends his devotees to preach in the material world. They are jivan mukta. From birth, they are not entangled. They remember their relationship with Krishna. They are never bewildered. So that is jivan mukta. Those who are ever liberated, even though they come here, or who achieve liberation by the mercy of the Lord in this lifetime, those who achieve the state of bhav, they begin reactivating their spiritual activities. So that is described in the Madhurya Kadambini of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, how the devotee at the stage of asakti begins having some idea of who he is, and then he, at the stage of bhav, he begins having spurti. Spurti means some visions, glimpses, very brief glimpses of some other reality, which puts him in trance. And he is constantly desiring and wanting to see the, to have these visions more and more and more and more. And so he becomes liberated even in this lifetime. The Uttama Adhikari is understood to be on the liberated platform. But he chooses to remain in this world to liberate others.
I just remembered a book called Simple for the Simple. Simple. One master from the West, who was in a very bad shape physically when she was almost at the end of her life. She was getting those things.
Yes, it's from Scotland. This is from Scotland. Yes, many devotees have had this experience. Ratna?
Ratna Ranjini. Yeah.
That lady from Scotland, the ex-wife of Balabhadra Swami, her husband took sannyas, and his wife definitely had glimpses of the spiritual world before she left her body. Yes. Even in Vrindavan we had what was her name? The other god sister. Archavigraha Mataji. I visited her when she was going to leave her body. Archavigraha, she was from South Africa, and she talked about the spiritual world before she left her body. She said, they are so nice. They are so nice. They are so nice. She was talking of the residents of Golok. She was describing, I've seen these, she was telling. There was also one devotee from Italy. His name was Namahata. He was a book distributor all his life with his wife. Both of them were book distributors, very strict book distributors all their life. But both of them were drug addicts before they became Krishna conscious when they were young. So in early age, in their 40s, even before the age of 40, the disease progressed in their body. And first she died, and then he died in Vrindavan. And when he died, he was lying on his bed, and all the devotees were around, and they were performing kirtan. They were performing kirtan, 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 and Namahata Prabhu was in a kind of half-unconscious, half-conscious state. And he was lying on his bed, and they knew he was still there, he was listening. And then before he left his body, he opened his eyes very widely and he spoke in his own language in Italian, and he hadn't spoken for days, and he opened his eyes with a fantastic smile on his face and he said bellissimo, which in Italian means very beautiful. He said very beautiful and he left his body. So this is, of course, this is example of mukti at the time of death. Mukti at the time of death. And I know that Archavigraha, when I visited her, the kind of vibrations that were emanating from her personality, I had never experienced in my life. And that was before she left. She was already in a very different kind of consciousness. Alright, so we will stop here. You all take a break and then you come back if you want. Okay.